Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation. It's a new start. No, it's not.
What are you doing? Worlds collide.
It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. I think that was a fair mistake because we just recorded a little pickup for our other smash hit Star Trek podcast, The Greatest Discovery, right before we started on today's episode. We had some erroneous information in the last episode. We needed to fix it.
We had to set the record straight, as we often do. If anyone listens to the very end of the episode, you'll find a lot of corrections back behind the credits, read in the Micro Machines voice to squeeze them all in.
Yeah, it's the fine print of audio, the Micro Machines voice.
I'm wondering if I'm fucking up so much already today because I've been drinking poison.
What have you been drinking? What's poisoning you?
I made myself an iced coffee.
Uh-huh.
Before getting on, because when we record in the afternoons, that's usually afternoon coffee time for me.
Oh, yeah.
And so I poured myself a big mug of iced coffee. I added just a blip of simple syrup.
Uh-huh.
Gave it a swish, threw in some ice, and I'm good to go. And I didn't notice until I took it to the dome. That syrup was moldy.
Oh, man. No!
Moldy syrup, and I'm usually like hot tip. You want to put a shot of vodka in your simple syrup if you can,
because it
helps to helps it last a little longer.
Here's another hot tip, Adam. If you do 2 cups of sugar to 1 cup of water, that will also make it last longer. And if you combine those two things, it lasts forever.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Ordinarily, that'd be something I would learn from a Let's Drink About It program or similar. But yeah, so I've been drinking mold today, and it made me wonder, Ben, what is the moldiest or most spoiled thing you've ever consumed, and then what happened to you?
I don't know if I've ever gotten sick from a thing that was moldy and known it was because of that. I'm like a total cut a bit off of a thing and still eat it if it's got mold on it guy.
Yeah.
To a point where, like, my wife has been, like, extremely dismayed to see me, like, plow through some leftovers that, you know, she would have thrown away and I wouldn't.
Uh-huh.
But I'll tell you, I was sick a couple of weeks ago, as many people know. I was, like, super-duper sick in bed for a week, and
many people continue to diagnose you.
I know. It's very fun to be told I had COVID, even though I've tested negative several times. Maybe I did. I don't know. Either way, I'm not sick anymore. So, but thank you for your concern. I made dinner the other night, and I realized, like, when I sat down, it was Beyond Burgers with Brussels sprouts as a side, like sautéed Brussels sprouts with garlic as a side.
Sounds like a gassy combination.
I sat down in front of the plate and realized that it was the exact configuration of foods that I had made the night before I woke up very sick, and I could not.
Wow.
I couldn't get through it. I cut the burger in half. I took like 4 bites, and I was like, "I'm too grossed out to proceed any further."
Your body really remembers that kind of trauma in an interesting way. It's one of the reasons I can't drink Coors Light beer. It's because I century clubbed that beer, and my body henceforth was like, we're not going to do that again.
That's one of the most right-wing consumer dollars you can spend in the United States with the Coors Company. They're big supporters of the John Birch Society. So you're gain, man.
All right.
Don't drink that junk.
I have plenty of other junky beers to drink, if that's what I'm into. There's no shortage of porch beer options, that's for sure.
That's like one of the prime types of American beer.
And now that microbrews have finally gotten with the program and are making more and more porch beers these days,
Yeah.
I'm a happy guy.
That's a nice move by the micro brews. Like, make a porch beer that is slightly more interesting than a macro, but still crushable as hell.
Don't give me too much taste. dial it back on that.
One thing that has resulted from my having been very sick is that I, like, accidentally went 2 weeks without having any alcohol. So I was like, wow, I'm like well into January without having had any alcohol. I might as well just make this a dry January.
And that's where you're at.
That's where I'm at. And then I realized today there's a very strong likelihood that the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets, will fuck my dry January up before it is over. And I think that the game of buttholes is in charge on this one. Not going to drink for fun, but I'll drink for work.
I mean, and in that case, it doesn't count, right?
Yeah, of course not. Like, there are lots of people in my family that have addiction issues, and I never drank until I was of legal drinking age because I was really scared of it. And I entered the waters of consuming alcohol very delicately because I did not want to find that I had an addictive relationship with it. And I guess maybe the instinct is just like reprove to myself that that's the case. But also, I mean, like, I know, you know, the rule with addiction is that you do things that like fuck up other parts of your life to get more. And that's just never been the relationship I had with booze.
Right. Because you and I can always access as much as we need. There's never any trade-off there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an abundance issue for us.
Yeah, right. That's how we know it's not a problem.
Yeah.
It is a lot like the Star Trek franchise itself.
Yeah. Right. We could quit anytime.
Abundance, not a problem. What we're here to litigate is the quality of that product.
Yes.
And we might as well get started with today's episode, Ben.
I'm into it. It's season 7, episode 23. Extreme measures.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
So Gene Hackman kills a unhoused person and then puts their body up on a gurney and then takes them to some weird like speakeasy morgue, right?
Yeah.
You're like, we should turn this episode into what we remember about Extreme Measures, the mid-90s movie.
Yeah. Like, why is it such grainy film stock? Do they think that makes it look cool? Because it just kind of makes it look more like a B movie, which it already weirdly feels like, despite Gene Hackman being in it.
What it really is a morality play between two different kinds of medical professionals.
Yeah.
One who's willing to sacrifice today for a better future.
Right.
And the other, the Hugh Grant character, is like, no, man, this is inhumane.
We have these ethics for a reason.
Yeah. So did you like this episode?
You really want to do this here, now, okay, let's do it.
You know, that's actually on theme for this episode in a lot of ways, that do we sacrifice our principles now for a better future?
Right.
Because the medical professional in question here is one Dr. Julian Bashir, and his patient is Odo.
I'm Mr. Bunkin.
Who is so close to death that they've proactively put him in a torpedo tube.
I got to say, if I were ever in the hospital for any length of time and I woke to find myself just in a body bag, half zipped up, while a doctor continued to work on me, I wouldn't have a good feeling about my outcomes.
Yeah. I guess this thing is supposedly stabilizing him, but there's, like, he really wants to know, like, what's the trend line? Like, if you can plot out how badly I'm falling apart here and tell me how much time I have left, that's exactly the information I want to know. And Bashir declines to speculate on that.
A week, maybe two.
Why don't you spring for the good stuff, Bashir? The pure aloe vera that you can only get in Hawaii and hot weather countries.
I'm not talking about that fake gel that's neon green that you see in the end cap at a CVS during the summer.
I'm talking about like the $20 a bottle stuff you get behind the counter.
What about a Gold Bond medicated lotion? Would that help?
I said it should have some lanolin in it, not some goddamn aloe vera bullshit, motherfucker.
Yeah, I think part of the reason he's in the torpedo is for easy cleanup, you know? Like, because the torpedo is kind of bowl-shaped, obviously, yeah,
it's gonna contain.
The casket is open in such a way that like anything that flakes off of him is just gonna fall harmlessly inside.
They don't even need to pull another sheet of paper across a bio bed. It's a no muss, no fuss.
We've watched changelings die before, and it seems like they tend to explode. So what do you think they're expecting to happen if Odo were to succumb to his disease? Probably just flake into dead leaves, right? And then close up the torpedo, and that's the thing.
It does seem to be like reinforced. There's like ribbing on the side, so maybe they're just trying to like direct the explosion into the tube.
God, I wish so bad that was the certainty. Like, yeah. All like changelings that explode upon death.
It's like that reinforced concrete bowl that the bomb squad sometimes uses. Yeah. You know, like if they know something's going to go off and they don't have any way to defuse it in time, they put it in that bowl.
Doctor, why are you wearing a full body suit?
Why do you have those wire cutters, Bashir? What are you doing?
Let me emphasize, Odo, that I haven't given up hope.
He wants to see Kira, who throughout this entire scene, I was like, where is she? Like, I'm looking all around the bedside, I'm not seeing her. She had to wait outside, but she's not far away, and she comes in and she does that nice thing that people who love a sick person do. Like, they walk into the hospital room and she's like, how's my flaky little guy doing? my crusty little breadstick? my crunchy little scone?
That's a big pile of autumn leaves that I'd love to just leap into right there.
How's my dry bowl of cereal doing? You know you're my raisin brand, don't you? You know it.
He basically kicks her off the station. If she has her way, she is staying by his side until the end. And he, like, A, would like her to be much more focused on helping the Cardassian resistance. And B, does not want the last thing he sees before he shuffles loose this mortal coil to be grief on Kira's face.
This is a great moment for Rene Auberjonois. Like, I really had some feels here. It's hard not to put yourself in his place, just thinking about, you know, so much of my life, Ben, has been about trying not to be a burden on other people. So, like, when I saw what he was trying to do, I was like, yeah, man, I get that completely. But also, it's an example of an actor knowing probably so many times you get this scene where it's like that scene in the movie where someone nurses an animal back to health and has to release them into the wild and has to like yell at it to set it
get
free.
Get out of here!
Right, but this never feels that way.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of the quality of the actors and the acting in the scene. It's really nicely done.
I agree. I also liked how much of the history of the characters is baked into it. Like, he talks about her losing Beryl, like, in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thinking about, like, the real lived experience of this character and not creating a haunted place for her in the future.
Isn't that my choice?
She agrees to what he asks.
Yeah. If you love someone, go away.
Set yourself free, I guess.
Right. If you go back, you didn't actually listen to what they were saying.
Yeah.
I think that's how the saying goes, right?
Yeah.
If you go back, why are you being such a selfish jerk?
I know why the uncaged bird sings. Because she won't have to look at me dying.
I'm concerned about seeing the pain in her eyes and also the fear moments before I explode.
Knowing that I could take her with me.
One of the grossest kisses in Star Trek history. She kisses him goodbye, even though he's super flaky.
It's like when you bite into a powdered donut and your face is covered in powdered sugar. Kira pulls away from the kiss, and it looks like she's sprayed her face with glue and then taken a dive into a pile of dead leaves.
Yeah. She walks down the promenade, and Chief O'Brien sees her, and he's like, oh, she must have had one of them deluxe Jumja sticks.
Outside, it's O'Brien and Garrick left to brief Sisko on the status of the Breen weapon. Not a lot of good news about what's going on here.
Yeah. Garrick and Kira have to kind of cut loose because they have to slip past a lot of Jem'Hadar patrols to get back to Resistance HQ.
Good hunting to you both.
And so they're off. And this McLaughlin group
issue one
kind of changes configurations because now it's Bashir and O'Brien there talking to Sisko about what their big diabolical plan is, W/R/T Section 31.
We believe that they were responsible for infecting Odo in the first place.
What?
I feel like if we were ever to do an award show for DS9, Avery Brooks's take of what?
So good.
Is an all-timer. An all-time single word line read.
What?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
His jaw is on the fucking floor. He is gobsmacked by this because it's like, it's so interesting to me because like nobody ever says this, but what O'Brien and Bashir have set about doing is a perfectly Section 31 style plan.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to use illegal technology. We're going to spread misinformation. We're going to lure this guy here and torture him until we get the information inside his head. We're going to like completely throw all of the rules, regulations, ethics, and morals out the window in order to trap Sloan and get the solution to Odo's problem. And at the end of the scene, Sisko's like, well, it's any number of crimes, but I guess it's what we have to do because it's already in motion.
Yeah. I mean, this is also coming from a guy who not quite explicitly told Worf to kill Gowron in the last episode, you know?
Yeah.
And isn't this the version of Sisko that I think we were promised at the end of In the Pale Moonlight, right? The guy who may feel justified in taking a path like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, the last time we saw Sloan, it was clear that, like, you can't go for help when Section 31 is in play. Nobody, like, if you start asking for help in Starfleet, people will hear that are in a position to make it harder, not easier, for you to get help. And so you kind of have to go outside the law in order to do it. But I don't know. Like, I thought a lot about what could be done with this episode. And this is the episode about saving Odo. And I wondered if, since this is the end run of the last season, what if it's kill Odo and then Starfleet has this horrible, like, xenocide on its record and people have to deal with that? Like, isn't that also an interesting story to tell here?
Hearing you say that almost makes me want more runway and a season 8, because isn't it interesting, like, how neutrally Starfleet has treated Odo almost from the start, right? They don't really consider him an ally. They don't really consider him a threat. As a utility, I think he's got such possibilities that really go unrealized for most of the series.
Right.
It's part of the reason that we're in this place with him and in the show, right? Is because they just sort of kicked the Odo can down the road, and now I guess we'll let him die because we haven't really cared that much about him up until now anyway. It's a strange indifference.
Yeah,
officially,
a very, like, cold indifference.
Yeah, and I wonder if the show had done more work up until now in increasing his value to the extent that we've got to save his life, and we have a very strong group of voices on the station going, we've got to do all that we can, and a counter-argument that says he's a huge threat that would make this conflict juicier than it is. Because no one's talking to each other. It's just whisper between Bashir, O'Brien, and Sisko, and then what may or may not be happening at Starfleet HQ.
Totally. I mean, like, liking Odo and having him be, like, part of the team on Deep Space Nine is enough for me to believe that these characters will do almost anything to save his life. Right. But I thought that a bigger story could be told. I'm not saying I dislike this episode. I'm just saying, like, they could have gone so many other ways with it. And I think it's interesting that this is what they chose.
Golden cut. The cut. Golden cut.
So the plan to lure someone from Section 31 is still the plan. Like, the first idea, best idea is what they're going to go with. Yeah. And the plan is for Bashir to get this person on the station and then use a clip show device that he stole from the Romulans to get the information from them about the ingredients for the cure.
Since they're illegal in the Federation, I'll assume that's another reason you didn't come to me.
He says, I don't think that this has a great chance of working, and it's illegal and immoral, but go ahead.
After the theme, I had the thought, why does O'Brien even wear a uniform anymore? Like, are we sure he's on duty here? We should catch up with Rom doing all of his work. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
His life is a living hell now.
I haven't seen Lita in weeks, and like, I'm just elbow deep in the warp cores of different birds of prey all the time. Yeah. And nobody is even, like, helping run the schedule for my team because the chief engineer is AWOL.
Yeah, and if he's not AWOL, he's playing darts. That's where he finds Bashir after hours at Quark's. Bashir is broken into his favorite bar, an action that I personally was very jealous of, really. Like, get some after-hours time at a bar. Have you ever done that? That's some of the best time.
Well, when I used to work at a bar, I would enjoy the after-hours quite a bit. You know, going home at like 7 a.m. after you clock out at 4:30 because you closed at 4 is it's fun stuff.
That's a late night. That's when I knew I was in with our favorite bartender in Seattle, when the sign turned and the door got locked and I found myself inside still. That's good stuff.
How'd you get in?
This scene made me wonder, when is the last time Bashir slept?
Yeah.
Because the last episode was about how he's been pulling like all-nighter after all-nighter, four all-nighters in a row. And now here he is. It's after hours at Quark's. Quark's has got to have a late closing time, right?
Yeah, you know they're going off of New York City closing time hours and not Seattle closing time hours.
And there Bashir is. He tosses off a line that the lock was not very complex, which we know to be false. We know that the lock on Quark's is extremely complex.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like doing that, the dart throwing of a man who is convicted in how important it is going to be to destroy Section 31.
He's doing the kind of dart throwing that you imagine would feel very good if you were upset, but would be so destructive in the wall, in anything around the dartboard.
It does cut to the wall at one point, and Bashir, on like a dot matrix printer, has printed out a picture of Sloan and put it up over the dartboard.
Yeah.
And it is just Swiss cheese.
Bashir makes the case in this scene that I think is pretty elegant. Like, he makes the case against conspiracies existing in the first place, because for something like what's going on here to have happened, the amount of people involved would have had to have been large enough to make it impossible to keep such a secret.
Right.
That's the gymnastics he's doing in his mind. Like, it just doesn't
You're telling me no one of these 73 people ever got drunk and, like, bragged about it to their buddy?
Right.
Or anything?
Right.
It's a mystery wrapped in a riddle inside an enigma.
Well, you won't get any argument from me on that.
Like, you know what's going to melt Odo? Jet fuel. Lots of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, like, Bashir seems, like, very fixated on, like, we've got to bring 31 down. And O'Brien is like, hey, remember Odo?
Yeah.
We got to save that guy. And then if it's possible, bring 31 down. And Bashir's like, right, right, right.
Prize on the eyeball, Bashir.
Yeah.
This is a good scene for O'Brien, though. This is why they work so well together. There's a compatibility.
Mm-hmm. And O'Brien doesn't have anything else to do, so he might as well.
When Bashir goes to bed that night, he wakes up with Sloane at his bedside, which begs the question, has anyone who Sloane appeared at bedside with jacked it since the first time he did that? Like, if you knew someone could appear at any time, I think I'd take a break until I knew what was going on.
I would definitely be lights on jacking it in that case, because I would want to know to be able to throw a blanket over myself.
Right.
If and when I started to see a transporter beam start to materialize.
You know, as much as we're making the case that it's shocking and horrible for the people that Sloane pops in on, imagine how awful it is for Sloane.
He's seen awful things.
Yeah, the worst things.
Which I'm happy to see you swallowed.
It's no wonder he's so radicalized. Like, he's got this, like, totally skewed sample of people at their worst. That's when he always sees them, you know?
He's the sort of guy that they made 8mm about.
Bashir has basically set up a mousetrap for Sloane. Bashir, like, hits the lever and it causes a ball to go down a chute and, you know, hit a croquet mallet that knocks into a post that a net is on, and that falls on Sloane. And Sloane is trapped. It's some kind of force field here. And the game is afoot.
You've got me.
I love that he has to drop the force field then after they've, like, monologued at each other for a second to phaser Sloane.
Yeah, that's big fun. And then Sloane wakes up in a bio bed underneath another force field.
Yeah.
And this is great.
It's a very complicated system of force fields and phasers.
I love a bad guy yelling at the guy who's trapped him from within the force field. Like, yeah. Sloane is super pissed.
Yeah, and threatening, like, O'Brien's family and stuff, like, real depraved shit.
And O'Brien's like, I don't know who you're talking about, and I know the viewers don't know who you're talking about either.
What, you mean that off-screen character that occasionally sends crab rolls to us? We can get crab rolls all kinds of places, dude.
Yeah. I was positive before this happened that Sloane would have a cyanide tooth.
Damn! I thought they were lucky that it wasn't a Duke Leto tooth where he exhaled and, like, nearly killed O'Brien or something.
Right. Sloane sees the hypocrisy of this scene. The hypocrisy that is suggested in that earlier scene between O'Brien, Bashir, and Sisko is actually described here by Sloane.
That's a little ungallant, isn't it?
Before he chews on his tooth.
He has sort of scrambled his hard drive, much like when you have a data emergency. You've accidentally wiped the wrong memory card, and that shot you can't get again was on the memory card that got wiped. You gotta get that. You gotta go download that software that's $100. Just to see if there's any hope of recovering the file.
I'm getting
fucking
chills.
Corrupted.
Hearing you describe this. But there's never any hope, Ben. You're never getting that shot back.
No, you could send it to one of those services, but give me a break. That's not happening.
The consequence is that he's going to live, but only for an hour. So we're setting up an artificial countdown here for the rest of the
year. Yeah, they need a device to go into the brain, and this made me think this would be a great opportunity to bring back the underutilized X-Men.
No shit.
They're great at making brain probing machinery.
Should keep one of them around, or all of them.
Yeah.
I love how there's a pregnancy to the moment of, like, well, we're doing real damage here. Do we just let him die in peace, or do we continue down this road? And Bashir's like, well, have you seen the movie Extreme Measures? Because an argument between Gene Hackman and Hugh Grant might be related to what we're going through here.
It's tempting. You might see it on a streaming service and be like, what is this mid-90s Gene Hackman, Hugh Grant movie that I've never even heard about? Maybe I'll give this a watch tonight. And then you'll be like, what am I watching? And that's sort of the question that they keep asking themselves for the rest of this episode, because they've got 43 minutes, one episode of television to get in, find the cure, and get out. They've got to go brain spelunking.
if we're lucky enough to make it to another Max Fun Drive with the Greatest Generation, I think a great reward would be a donor-only feed episode of The Greatest Generation doing Extreme Measures, the Gene Hackman Hugh Grant movie.
Oh, yeah, that would really motivate people because that has such a beloved following.
We're making that canonical Greatest Gen.
If we get 10,000 new and upgraded...
Someone over at Amazon Prime is looking at the data and they're like, hey, boss, something really crazy is going on with the metrics for the mid-90s Gene Hackman, Hugh Grant movie Extreme Measures.
We can't explain this. It usually gets zero views and now it's getting some views.
It's showing here that it's gotten 3 views.
That's over 300% more views than it normally gets.
This has to be a mistake.
All of Amazon Web Services goes down as they like pull the servers apart trying to find where the error is coming from.
You don't understand. This is impossible. Alamo Ring, come to Ford.
Alamo Ring, come to Ford. What are you doing? Alamo Ring, come to Ford. What are you doing? Alamo Ring, come to Ford. What are you doing now?
Exactly. We get a really fun set of cross dissolves here as we go through the process of possibly extending Sloane's life, getting him to wear the Clip Show headband.
Yeah, a second bigger Clip Show device is brought in.
It's kind of a Clip Show sweatband. It's so yeah. Thick.
He's a maniac on the bio bed, and he's dying like he's never died before.
Right. As Bashir describes it to O'Brien, who is trying his hardest not to laugh, the plan is to walk around Sloane's mind as if it were real.
You've explained it to me 3 times and I still don't get it.
Sure, there could be some dangers involved. But before Bashir can finish describing the situation, O'Brien has volunteered to go with. Volunteered so fast that he's not going to tell his wife, his kid, or anyone else on the station that that's what he's going to do.
You just have to trust me, Chief.
He's going to hop right in there and be the Sundance to Bashir's Butch Cassidy.
Yeah, they're going on an adventure inside the mine, and they lie down themselves and put on their own Clip Show devices and jack into the Sloane tricks.
They're missing someone as a part of this team, Ben. They're missing the body person, the guy who's in the room monitoring their vitals.
I feel like Christopher Nolan watched this episode and stole its premise and made Inception and made that key improvement that one person stays awake and has the silver briefcase and pushes the button or tips you into the tub when they need to.
Flatliners did it first. Like, you need someone with the paddles.
Yeah. Gotta have those paddles.
I love how Bashir's like, when O'Brien presses him on how they Sloane and program if they wanted to leave his brain, Bashir's like, yeah, I can just raise my blood pressure or something and that'll break the spell and that'll get us on out of there. And O'Brien totally believes it. Seems pretty believable.
It's like, cool, so we don't have to like play old Edith Piaf records or anything?
It's all very simplistic.
They materialize inside.
I'm in a strange man surrounded by strangers in a strange room.
Then they are in a Deep Space Nine turbo lift, which is falling rapidly, and they think they're going to die, and then they don't.
Are you sure?
That's so interesting that you're a turbo lift falls person, because when I watched this scene, I thought they were going up too fast.
I guess smashing against the ceiling and smashing against the floor would have the same cat foodification effect.
You know, it just stands to reason when you and I look at a turbo lift moving super fast, you're a turbo lift moves down and I'm a turbo lift moves up.
Yeah.
That's why we work so well together.
Yeah. You're really the yin to my yang. It's weird. It's like a cut to commercial and then they're not going super fast.
Right. I wish that the turbo lift had open sides so you get the wind effect.
That would have been good. They're very ginger about like letting go of the guardrails and the doors open, and they're met by a much softer side of Sloane.
Welcome.
He's kind of dressed like Picard getting ready to go on vacation here, and perfectly happy to host them, and would even like to tell them the cure to the disease that Odo has. But when he tries, his words come out scrambled.
Believe me, I want to tell you what you need to know.
Then tell us.
I can't!
There's a threatening feeling to knowing a person or a character as a bad person and for that person to treat you kindly.
Yeah.
That they are doing here, because this is nice Sloane. This is Sloane out of the leather and into a natural garment.
Yeah.
This is Sloane with a wife and a child. A Sloane being praised by his friends and family and then eulogizing himself in such a way that is almost more ominous and threatening than a man in leather waking you up from a slumber.
I mean, I would feel very upset if, as Sloane does to Bashir and O'Brien, somebody said that they'd like me to come to a party and it turns out to be them hosting their own funeral.
Yeah.
Very awkward. And weird that it's like him taking this opportunity to apologize to his loved ones and family for devoting himself to his work. He tells his wife, I told you when we got together, baby, you were going to share me with every unethical act to advance the cause of the Federation.
Sloane turns to Bashir and O'Brien and he's like, you can walk around in my mind, you can ride my turbo lift, but you cannot watch my motherfucking television set.
You can enjoy my postmodernistic bullshit space station.
Oh yeah, I made Ralph fuck you because it makes me feel good.
We learned that his first name is Luther. I don't know. Did we learn that when he was pretending to be a cartographer?
I think so.
Yeah.
Ever since I watched the hit BBC series Luther, starring Idris Elba, I always pronounce that word loofah.
I never watched that, but that's very fun.
Oh, he's great in that. Really good. Yeah.
That's a scrubby, desiccated sea creature that's great at repairing guitars.
Did you get the sense that Jessica, who is Jessica Sloane, I should say, Lufa's wife, was kind of turned on by Sloane's speech here, I thought. I think Sloane's self-eulogy really flooded her basement.
Yeah, she's like, finally, he's the emotionally available man that I had hoped I had married.
Yeah. Yeah.
I knew this was in here somewhere.
Too late now. Jessica's like, I'm going to go get the pad with the ingredients to cure Odo because you're having a problem with your words, hubby. And once she makes with the pad...
Here you go, doctor.
Leather Sloane from the hallway shoots husband Sloane before he can give the pad to them, which is really cool because the beam splits between O'Brien and Bashir. It's a great shot.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's awesome. It's devastating. The party is gone. They're alone in the wardroom now. And I wanted the camera to like cut to the floor for that pad.
Mm-hmm.
And have it just be, you know, just have the pad be gone or something. But like, I was like, the pad didn't get shot. Sloane got shot. So, right. So where's the pad? The pad's what we need.
And in dream logic, like all the party guests have disappeared. The banquet table with all that food's gone. The turned on wife also gone. The scene has changed.
We cut back to reality where in a darkened room, Sloane and Bashir and O'Brien are lying on their slabs and Sisko and Ezri are just kind of like walking among them going like, what are they doing in here? I wish they'd left one person awake to explain what's going on.
And I guess this isn't some kind of obscure meditation therapy.
Sisko, to his credit, is like, we better get a medical team in here to figure this out because we don't quite know what we're looking at.
And also security to stand outside the science lab because like a highly wanted criminal actor and two of our most important officers are in here unattended with the door unlocked, out unconscious.
As soon as the security team is told that Sloane is immobilized in there, they're like, yeah, give me between 5 and 7 minutes, and I'll be there. I just need to take care of something I've been meaning to do, and I haven't been able to do for like weeks.
Trust me, it won't take long. I'm ready to go.
I need you to know that I'm going to be better at my job if I can just take care of this thing and then show up probably closer to like 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, this sounds like the kind of mission that will take focus and no distractions. And honestly, like, I could be 100% better on both of those things in 3 minutes if you just can give me that.
Look, I've already started doing the thing that I've told you I need to do before showing up to work. So I think honestly we're talking about 90 seconds to 2 minutes tops, and then I'll be over there. But again, and I can't emphasize this enough, this needs to happen for me to be effective at my job.
Listen, step one, replicate a tube sock. Step two, get out an iPad. Like, it's going to go lickety split. It would blow your hair back if you could be here in the room for it. But honestly, that's kind of the problem that I'm trying to solve for. So you can't.
Those poor security people have had an entire career of maybe a drinking glass being Odo in their room. And also the possibility of Sloane just appearing at any moment at any given time.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Bashir and O'Brien in the dream leave the wardroom and find themselves not on Deep Space Nine anymore, but in a Federation hallway of some kind. They're walking around. They get set upon by another Section 31 leather daddy who phasers both of them.
We need to speak to
But the phaser wounds are painful, and they're like trying to wrap their minds around this. Like, this is supposed to be a fucking dream. Like, who cares about a phaser?
At this point in time, I would have expected O'Brien to start to fall apart, because he's a guy who's been to mind prison before.
Yeah.
He's been fucked with in this way, and it hasn't gone well. But what's happened here is they're both cranky and hurt by this experience.
Yeah.
And Bashir is like, you know what, enough of this. I'm going to Sloane end program. But he can't make it work.
They try to give up, and they fail.
Yeah.
They fail to fail.
This is something I don't understand.
Doesn't make sense.
O'Brien should be mad. You're totally right. Like, I don't think that it was sold to him as there is a risk of us dying or being hurt going in here. It's just to put on the VR goggles and laugh at how cool VR is for 3 minutes until it makes you nauseous, and then you have to take off the VR goggles.
He gives voice to a question I think we've had over the course of many years talking about Star Trek, which is, what is the mission that rises to the level of doing a bigger goodbye than usual before you go to work, you know?
Right.
Because he's regretting never seeing his wife and kid again in a way that I don't feel like you and I were told we'd never see Keiko and Molly again.
The show sort of did that to us already.
We know exactly how that feels to have... to possibly lose a couple of people that you care a lot about.
Yeah, he wishes he'd written them a letter, and that would have been an interesting scene. It would have been interesting, like, getting to this point in writing the script, it would have been interesting if they'd been like, no, let's go back and write it that, like, they know that this is a huge risk, and have him say, like, hey, I'm going spelunking in the mind of this terrible guy.
I'm guilty of a terrible crime, Doctor.
And it's a big risk, but I gotta do it for Odo. Like, that would have been an interesting scene. And you could have given Rosalind Chow a little on-screen time.
Keiko would obviously be sad, but I think a not insignificant part of her character would feel like this was a mercy death. Like, finally O'Brien is free.
And finally Keiko is free, too.
Right.
Anyways, they're sitting there kind of bemoaning what has happened to them when the light at the end of the tunnel shows up down one of the hallways, and they sort of realize that this is death beckoning, and they walk out, and instead of dying, it's them waking up in the science lab with Worf and Sisko there as the welcoming committee, and a nurse who they're telling them, like, hey, Sloane is actually, like, right on the brink of death, and there's no way we're letting you, like, stay in there with him, because he could take you down with him.
They wake up and Sloane's already in his torpedo tube.
Yeah, they're like, we're just doing this now as a policy. You know, anybody could be a changeling, so we put them inside one of these, so if they explode when they die, it can contain some of the blast.
This scene before they pop out of Sloane's brain felt like they approached saying something really interesting, but didn't have the nerve as a show to actually say it, you know?
You mean the thing about O'Brien and Bashir liking each other more than O'Brien and Keiko?
Yeah, you could sense that they're approaching saying something that could be off-putting to people, yeah, or significant in a different way, and it seems like the scene gets interrupted in such a way that they don't get that chance. And so you get kind of the bends, like, because they approach this moment in their relationship, and then they emerge from Sloane's mind, and then they're right back into mission priorities.
That's interesting, because, like, I know lots of couples where, you know, like, the people in them will declare that their partner is also their best friend, and other couples where that never felt true, but that doesn't make me feel like they don't love each other and have a really deep connection as a couple.
Right.
And a lot of the time, there is a value judgment placed on one or the other. Like, oh, like, if you're saying your wife is your best friend, there's something wrong with you. Or, oh, if your wife isn't your best friend, there's something wrong with you. And I think that there is interesting writing to be done on it works differently for different couples. And that would have been a nice thing to see here. But I agree, they kind of didn't sink their teeth into it as much as they could have.
Yeah, I agree. Bashir tries to get the nurses to save Sloane, but their efforts fail, and Sloane is dead.
Yeah. I think that is the second of three times that Sloane dies in this episode.
What I love about Star Trek is that they play you the single brass instrument of a loss of hope in this scene. So I'm willing to believe that Sloane's actually dead.
Yeah.
Like the show knows the technologies it uses to suggest a thing has happened, including the single brass instrument.
They can make it feel even more real by whipping out that flugelhorn.
Right.
Bashir heads back to his room and starts reading his book, which starts very late in the book. It's the opening passage is on like page 296, and Bashir cites this as evidence that they are still in the simulation. It's the classic where we're still inside the Matrix plot device. So he and O'Brien keep poking around, and they find their way into evil, full leather daddy Sloane's office. This is Section 31. They've made it into the Holy of Holies, where all the secret info is kept.
And this is a part of the brain that gets bangers dropped on it. And this is a technique that raises the tension here too. Not only are we running out of time, but bangers are getting dropped. You got leather Sloane reclined in an office chair, kind of goading Bashir about all of this great intelligence all around him. Like there's not an inch of his desk that isn't covered in something secret and interesting. And it puts Bashir into the position of having to, like, this is kind of the fallacy of the episode, right? Because I think the episode is suggesting that Bashir has a choice. Either he supermarket sweeps
supermarkets
Sloane's desk into his cart and, like, runs out of his mind with all this stuff, as if he could possibly do that, or he takes the necessary intelligence about the Odo cure and saves his own life. But I don't think, like, the show is telling us that he's at risk here, but I never felt like this was effectively portrayed, because if Bashir were to stay long enough to gather all of the information on all of the bookshelves of Sloane's mind, he'd die, and then he'd never be able to share that information with anyone anyway.
You have to believe that the Sophie's Choice is between destroying 31 or saving Odo, and that Bashir opts for saving Odo. But in order to believe that, the, like, lethality of staying in the simulation any longer needs to be, you really need to buy that. And I just don't, I feel like because they've used so much misdirection and tricks to keep us in the simulation as long as we've been in. It's hard to believe, since we've been stuck inside it, it's hard to also believe that it's going to kill them if he dies while they're still in.
I think part of it also is like a banger has such a different quality than a degrading holosuite program where you see the static and the shit happen in frame, right, where you really get a sense of how much time you have left in that circumstance, that a banger just doesn't give you enough information.
Right. It's kind of the language of a ship being attacked to give us a sense of the degradation of his mind. But maybe, yeah, maybe they should have gone with another way of illustrating that.
It's fucking nuts because Bashir just leaves with the Odo pad, even though he's got another hand.
Yeah.
So O'Brien has two. Like, yeah, grab a couple of randoms and get the fuck out.
Get the thing about Jerish Ineo having a Section 31 person in his cabinet.
Yeah.
I want to see Ineo go down. Even if he's out of office, I want to see him impeached, you know?
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
It's worth it to send a message.
Yeah.
Grab that pad that says, how tons of people like to jack it.
It's just a spreadsheet of different materials and... Oh, this guy uses a hand towel. This guy over here uses a roll of paper towels.
I love that pad has like a labeler sticker on the top that says that. It's not a digital cover sheet to the information inside. No. It's actually labeled.
So they don't waste any time. They get a hypo spray ready for Odo. Odo alive looks a lot worse than Sloane did dead at this point. And Bashir says, this ain't going to hurt a bit. It's going to hurt a lot. And administers the injection.
I wish that that he closed the lid to the tube on him. Just in case.
It's interesting. I don't know how much more painful this can be than how bad Odo already seems to be. I thought they did a really great job of making him look even worse at the end of the episode than he did at the beginning.
Because you really have to plan that out. Like, the stages of this need to be visual, and you need all 12 of them, or however many there are, you know?
Yeah, however many shots he needs to be in, and what time has transpired in between.
When did Star Trek characters start screaming in pain? That was a question I had when I watched this episode, you know, right off of the heels of the third season of Star Trek Discovery, where it seems like everyone is screaming as loud as they can when they're in pain. This would be that
once
moment,
an episode.
Right?
They have a little celebration, O'Brien and Bashir. They've once again broken into Quark's bar. Quark is really going to have to get Rom to replace that lock at this point, because they're also stealing expensive booze from behind the bar.
You never keep your good stuff in the Speedwell, though. I thought that was weird. Like, it's just right there.
Very strange.
Some
of the fancier stuff in certain bars gets kept under lock and key, you know?
I think they need a bar advisor on this show.
Yeah.
That would have been good.
Is O'Brien drinking Bushmills?
That's Protestant whiskey.
Price is right, ain't it?
Kind of looked that way. Yeah, thought the same thing. I love how they find the good stuff and then just take it to the dome.
Yeah, they're pouring themselves like 2-finger glasses of that and just knocking them back. Holy shit.
So for some reason, O'Brien in this scene remembers that dinner is waiting, and this is a scene of science fiction to me, because if you know that you have a dinner plan and you have made a choice to go to the bar and haven't told anyone about that choice, and then in order to cover your ass, you bring a friend to dinner so that you're putting off the big fight you're going to have by showing up late by bringing a buddy to it. Oh boy, O'Brien.
All of this is terrible math. And listen, like, think about the timing here. We're talking about them in Quark's after hours specifically.
Yeah. When did the O'Briens eat? That math doesn't check out.
Yeah. The button on the episode is them heading to dinner and O'Brien heading for the wood chipper. Did you like the episode, Adam?
You really want to do this?
Here, now, okay, let's do it!
You know, there were four or five moments where this episode just didn't make any fucking sense at all. But it was paced in such a way that the moment I started to have doubts about the logic, we were just on to the next.
Yeah.
And that felt fairly intentional.
Very Christopher Nolan-y in that way.
This is definitely a kind of Star Trek episode that we get from time to time. The stuck in a holodeck, the what's it like in someone's mind type episodes. And I feel like you can't compare those to any other kind of episodes. You can only compare them to two kinds of that type. And I thought of that genre of Star Trek episode, I thought this was a fun one.
I did too. I think it's very interesting to me that they gave an entire episode just to O'Brien and Bashir here in the end run. Like, I haven't been thinking about episodes in terms of like, this is going to be a Kira episode, this is a Sisko episode, this is an O'Brien episode so much, but this one really felt like a little bottle where they were like, okay, we're just going to tell a very like focused, tight little story that has big implications for the rest of the arc, but feels like a little break in the middle of that long story arc. And I like it as that. I like the catching our breath before the breathless conclusion, which I'm sure we're in for.
Makes me wonder how intentional it may have been to just honor these two characters with an entire episode like this, because it feels like the search for Odo's cure might have been a cozy A or B story in another episode's story, you know?
Yeah, but I feel like Sloan getting a big finale was fun. Like I said, there is a really strong case to be made for having Odo be killed in this episode, and having the like weight of that carry storylines into the future. Like, what if Odo had died, but they got the cure? Then they have this weird quandary, like, do we offer it to the founders? Do we sue for peace by saying we can cure your disease?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, there's so many interesting directions you could take that.
I wonder if we're going to get the moment where Odo goes back to work and he's like, all right, who wants to go over the reports? And he looks around the security office and no one has showed up for work. And then when they finally do, they are exhausted looking.
Well, nothing exhausting to me about Priority One messages, Adam. Do you want to see if we have any of those in the old inbox?
I mean, we only do two because that's about as many times as we can do Priority One in that amount of time.
In a single day.
Yeah. Feels like a couple of years ago, Ben, we used to be able, like, we probably could have done more Priority One messages when we were younger.
In the early days when we were younger.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have less stamina now. Sad.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a promotional nature. And it is about Closing Crawl, a podcast that you can find on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your podcasts. Closing Crawl is a new podcast about the Star Wars, the Clone Wars animated series, and each week we seek to answer questions such as, if recap podcasts about decades-old TV shows were ships, and the Greatest Generation was the USS Enterprise, which podcast would be the USS Hood?
Wow.
Or Gonk Droids, Snog, Marry, or Avoid? And who is more evil, the Republic or the Separatists?
Wow.
Closing Crawl welcomes all the Star Wars curious friends of DeSoto to join us. So once again, you can find Closing Crawl on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find podcasts. Sounds like a fun riff on a very rich part of Star Wars, that Clone Wars animated series.
I saw the feature. There was a Clone Wars animated feature film that I actually saw in theaters, and I remember enjoying it. I And I also remember like wishing I'd seen more of the animated series, because it seemed like they were kind of drawing on beloved characters and storylines that I had no context for, because I haven't watched any of that. That sounds like a great podcast too, Closing Crawl. If I do my animated Star Wars rewatch that I've been meaning to do for years, I'll be sure to check out Closing Crawl.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Adam, our next message is from Josh, and it's to Kristen. And it goes like this. Happy anniversary to my Mzadi. You introduced me to Voy, that's short for Voyager, and I introduced you to Deep Space Nine. 13 years later, the sky's the limit. Love you tons.
Boy, from what I've heard about Voyager and what I know about Deep Space Nine, it would seem as though one of the two really made out better on that deal.
I would argue that the Josh made out better. How about that? Josh and Kristen's anniversary was in early October, so sorry that that's so late. Just checking here. It looks like we are now seeing stuff booked into... I see things as late as September 2021 on our calendar. So if you want to get a Priority One message up against a specific date, please think well in advance about that.
Love to see it.
Happy belated anniversary to Josh and Kristen, and thanks for the support, Closing Crawl. And if you'd like to get a P1 on the show, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where it's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda? Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to take a little bit of an unusual path to my drunk Shimoda, and I'm going to say two people.
Mm.
And this is like in keeping with the original drunk Shimoda ethos, right? Someone who is making a decision that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Someone acting in a way that could put other people in danger.
Right.
And for me, I just can't think of anyone else besides Gene Hackman and Hugh Grant for deciding to do extreme measures. And, you know, good for them for their careers surviving that decision.
Yeah.
But at the time, I mean, kind of a lot at stake there. And just a bewildering career choice, a strange movie.
What's the pitch of your movie? It's a movie about people being cruel to the unhoused?
Right.
That'll put butts in seats.
Just 2 hours of that.
Yeah.
What about you, Ben?
My drunk Shimoda is Bashir for his inelegant attempt to dance around the fact that this injection is going to hurt like hell, and for how badly Odo just saw right through him. I love that. I love Odo just saying, like, don't bullshit a bullshitter, doc. Give it to me straight. This is going to suck, right? I love medical interventions that work instantly, by the way.
No, you know? Shit.
You ever gotten like a blood blister under a fingernail and had a doctor like do the thing where they put a hole and release the pressure?
I haven't.
And like the pain just like goes away. It's amazing.
That sounds really nice. That sounds like sweet release.
Yeah. Almost worth the like nights of agony while your fucking hand feels like it's going to fall off before you get that.
Yeah, almost.
Gotta get that cold press latch.
Well, are our final episodes of Deep Space Nine going to be worth the agony that got us here? It's a question that you'll answer when you tell us which episode's coming up next, and it's a question that the Game of Buttholes Will of the Prophets will answer once I head over there.
Yeah, head over to gach.biz/game while I tell you about Season 7, Episode 24, The Dogs of War. With the Cardassian resistance crushed, the Federation war against the Dominion reaches the prelude to one final showdown. The prelude, Adam. It's the penultimate episode of Deep Space Nine, and it's a prelude.
Why do you keep saying it that way?
Prelude.
Was your first car a Honda Prelude?
No, I didn't have any nice cars.
Yeah, that was a nice car when I was in high school.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right, Ben. I can't believe it, but we've crawled back quite a ways in the game of Butthole's Wool of the Prophets. We're three rows from the top. We're on square 75. And just ahead, we've got a nth degree episode. That's about the only thing that we're in danger of hitting. And really, if you're me and you've done the statistical analysis, which I have not, but I've read about, a Twitter friend of DeSoto named Jeremiah, he's at J. Perry Hill, actually ran the numbers and says that I'm haunted by the ones. In my 74 rolls, a one has come up 20 times, or 27% of the time.
That's so wild.
Yeah. So it's not just in my head. It's actually happening.
Wow. All right. Well, I'm getting ready for you to hit square 76, Adam, but let's let fate decide. Go ahead and roll that bone.
I have rolled a 5.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Whoa!
Which has put us on square 80. It's a regular old episode. And you know what's fun about where we are is that when it comes time to roll the die again for our last episode of Deep Space Nine, just ahead is the no notes square, wow. Which would be a really fun twist to put on a 2-hour episode. That's
no
big
kidding.
Fun.
Wow. All right, buddy. Well, I am looking forward to next week's episode in a big way. I'm hoping folks who enjoy this program will tell a friend about it. Maybe leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. If you have a question for us that you'd like us to answer at the beginning of an upcoming episode, we might be able to find it on Apple Podcasts if you leave that question in your review. You could also support us financially by going to MaximumFun.org/join and set up a little monthly contribution. You'll get access to the bonus feed and you'll have our eternal gratitude.
Big thanks, as always, to our social media employee, Bill Tilly. He's not just an employee, he's a friend.
He's a friend, he's a daddy.
This is like that scene in Clear and Present Danger when the president's like getting advised on how to describe a person involved in a scandal. Like, mm-hmm. you don't just say that he's the card daddy, you say he's the best card daddy. You don't just say he's the best card daddy, you say he's one of the best card daddies that ever existed. It's Bill Tilly. He runs the ones and the twos on Twitter and Instagram. You can find both at Greatest Trek.
We got to thank our buddy Adam Ragusea, who made the original theme music for this program, and Dark Materia, who made the original Picard song upon which all of that is based. Goose hard at work on new theme music for the show, which will debut in a couple of weeks.
I'm psyched to hear that. The Goose is so talented when it comes to the music that it's almost a shame that he's making a wildly popular YouTube channel dedicated to cooking, which is an even better use of his great talent.
Indeed. I think that just about does it, Adam.
Wow. Well, till next time, we'll be back at you with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which may be better off just watching a mid-90s movie starring Hugh Grant and Gene Hackman.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.